May it please the court. This case is fundamentally a case of contract law. Petitioners had binding contracts with the Midwest ISO.
Which contracts are you referring to?
Well, that's an interesting question. According to FERC, the contract is really just the ISO tariff and the umbrella service agreements. But in our view,
those
it's more than that.
Those are important, aren't they?
They are. But what's crucial for these particular transactions is the ISO's OASIS posting that offered a discount, and even more important, the confirmation sheets that are associated with each transaction that set out the amount of service to be provided, the path that service is to follow, the duration of the service, and the price to be paid for the service. These confirmation sheets were appended to our complaint filed at FERC. They actually are simply printouts of the OASIS postings specific to each transaction.
Okay. Now, am I not right in thinking that 88888, or one of its subsets, requires that discounts be available only in the absence of capacity constraint? Am I misreading that? And that they be available to all customers using the unconstrained paths between those points?
That's correct. Well, I think electrically.
So what meaning can, doesn't that circumscribe the meanings which can be given to the posting?
I think the reason that this particular interface became fully subscribed is because the ISO offered the discount.
Well, I know.
The service.
I mean, that raises interesting questions about how FERC is to go about enforcing those rules, but I'm not sure that question, however interesting, is helpful to you.
Well, I think, first, once an interface is fully subscribed, electrically, it's not possible to provide additional service over that interface because of the constraint.
Right.
But here, I guess FERC is claiming that somehow it's discriminatory for the petitioners to retain their discounts for the transactions, for their transactions after the time the ISO has withdrawn discounts.
More basic than discrimination, and that is that under the applicable rules, including the tariff, the discount shouldn't exist at all.
Well, I
recognize they do make the claim about discrimination, but there's a more fundamental objection they're also, at least implicitly, asserting.
Well, that would be, I think, completely illogical if you could you offer a discount and, as a result, parties are attracted to taking the service. It's economic for them to do so. The interface becomes fully subscribed, and then suddenly the discount is withdrawn for those transactions.
To me, it makes complete market sense to have the discount available while you're drawing customers, and customers under 888 would seem to be on notice that when the route is constrained, they're not going to get it.
Well, Your Honor, I think you've stated FERC's position, which seems to be that a discount can be rescinded by the ISO at any time.
Well that's I'm not sure they have to go that far,
that position
raises a question about reading the posting, right? Which talks about keeping it open for 18 months.
Right. Yes, but the posting is an offer. That posting said the ISO commits to post rates no higher than these rates for a period of 18 months.
Right,
that's simply an offer by the transmission provider.
But if that offer is ambiguous, if it could be read in two different ways, which this one can, you read it one way, FERC reads it another way. You read it as
and that's saying, and that, Your Honor, is why you go to the next step, which is what's contained in the confirmation sheets that reflect the specifics for each transaction. The offer of the discounted rate, once accepted by the customer and confirmed and agreed to on OASIS, as reflected in the confirmation sheets, establishes the filed rate for the transaction.
For the transaction. It doesn't answer the question of what happens after 18 months.
Well, I think it does. If you look at the confirmation sheets, there's no indication that those contain the full term of the service as well as the discounted rate. There's no indication on those sheets that a higher rate would apply to that, to some portion of that term.
Right, so if those are silent, and if the initial OASIS finding could be read one of two ways, then isn't the next step our deference to FERC's interpretation of it?
No, Your Honor, not in this case, not where FERC's interpretation conflicts with Order 888, and it's
I'm sorry, why what aspect of 888 does it conflict with?
Right. I thought it was consistent with Order 888.
No, Your Honor. In fact, if you look at paragraph 7 of FERC's rehearing order, FERC quotes extensively from 888A, and it's discounting discussion in that order. But it leaves out the key language in the passage it quotes. You can find the full text at...
I'm sorry, where are we?
On the rehearing order, paragraph 7. You can find the full text of the passage at page 821 of FERC's brief in its statutes and regulation addendum. And the language that FERC omitted is this. Second, once the provider and customer agree on a discount, the details of the discounted service, the price, points of receipt and points of delivery, and length of service must be immediately posted on the OASIS. And that's what happened here and what the confirmation sheets contain. Again, these sheets are simply printouts of OASIS postings, and the sheets for the transactions at issue include the full length of service and the discounted price, and only the discounted price. It's correct that the ISO has discretion to post discounts and to withdraw discounts prospectively without a filing at FERC, but Order 888 does not give the ISO the right to revoke a discount that it has previously confirmed for a transaction. Also, with respect to deference, under Chevron, to warrant deference, the FERC's interpretation must be reasonable and must be consistent. And as I've indicated, FERC has departed from Order 888A. It's also departed from fundamental contract principles. First, the principle that a contract should be read to give effect to all its provisions.
You quoted from us a minute or two ago from the TSR, is it right? Didn't quite a few of these leave the price blank?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's partly because there is it's an iterative process. There's a back and forth, and there was in this case a reprocessing of the queue. But I think I don't think there's any dispute that the only price that appears in the operative confirmation sheets is the discounted rate, roughly half the full rate. And if you look at in the joint appendix at page 72. There's an index of the for the confirmation sheets that sort of takes you through it. And let me give you a couple of examples of the key pages. At Joint Appendix page 79, there is a confirmation sheet for the Tenasca transaction that shows the discounted price. And at Joint Appendix page 96,
I'm sorry,
for the Cargill transaction.
Page 79.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What is the language on page 79 that's useful to your position?
I think it's the price, Your Honor, that shows the $13,800 and some odd dollars per megawatt year. That's
and
the discounted price.
What is it there that locks that in?
Well, I think the term is also the full term of that transaction is also shown on that confirmation sheet. Similarly, on JA 96. If you have a Cargill transaction that extends through the end of 2011.
Stop date and time, is that?
Yes, that's correct. And on JA 96, you have a
Cargill. That with the language in the posting about the commitment for 18 months.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
It seems a little hard to reconcile that with the commitment in the posting, not to have another rate until 18 months have passed.
I think what the posting is saying is that there will not be that the offer of the discounted rate will be held open for 18 months. The Midwest ISO will not come up with a new offer at least until after that time. But for transactions that were agreed to within that window, the discounted rate applies for the full term of the transactions. The ISO had the opportunity to counteroffer if it didn't agree with that. That's what its business practices provide under Section 6.7. It didn't do that. It confirmed the request. That's the final state under its business practices for these transactions. And that's the discounted rate.
And what about the one at Joint Appendix 81 that has no price? What's your answer to that again?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, you couldn't.
The TSR at page 8, I'm sorry, let me get closer. At Joint Appendix 81, there's one that has a blank, nothing's filled in for the price. I think it's Joint Appendix 81.
I think this sheet does not reflect the final state. It's subject to this was showing the reprocessing of the queue.
Is there something in the record that indicates that price was filled in eventually?
That the price was
filled in. It's blank here.
Yes, I think for each of the transactions, there is a confirmation sheet.
Where is that in the record?
The discounted price filled in.
Sorry.
And that in the record, that was all of these sheets were attachment A to our complaint. It's discussed in the complaint, and the sheets themselves are in the joint appendix from pages 71 through.
Wait, the confirmation came from the ISO? Where did the confirmation come from that filled in this price?
The way OASIS works, the ISO posted its offer of discounts, and it included a spreadsheet, and the discounts varied for each path.
I understand.
All communications have to take place on OASIS.
I understand that, too.
Electronic, and the parties accepted. They put in a request for service.
I got all that.
There's the discounted price, and that was accepted by the parties.
I know, but where, maybe this isn't important, but just tell me where does the price for this particular acceptance of the discount at 81 come into play?
Your Honor, I'll have to track that through. It would be on a different confirmation sheet. It would not be on that particular one.
Well, it's not there. It isn't there.
But there is one, if that's your question.
But did the confirmation come from ISO on OASIS? Is that where it came from?
Yes, it's from the ISO. When the transaction is confirmed and enters a confirmed state, and
does that mean anything more than that they're off that they will in fact provide the power at the discounted rate? It doesn't say anything about for how long, does it?
There's nothing on the confirmation sheets that would suggest that the rate does not cover the full term of service. FERC itself says that the petitioners are governed by the full term of service shown on these sheets. How can it be that the sheets are good for the term but not good for the price that's included on the sheets? That's
all right, your time's up. Good morning, Carol Banter for the Commission. The Commission in this case did not ignore the confirmation sheets. It did read all the pieces together, the service agreements, the tariff, and the confirmation sheets. And I think the answer to the last question posed by petitioner, if we look at any one of the service agreements, because they're all identical except the one we noted in our brief has an extra section 5, so the section number is a little different. But JA-188 is the service agreement for Cargill. And Section 3.0 of the service agreement says the ISO, that the transmission customer will give the information to the ISO and agrees to take and pay for the requested service in accordance with the provisions of the tariff and this service agreement. Then in Section 4, It says that the particular request for service will determine the term of the capacity, the reservation of capacity, the dates. Service under this agreement for transactions shall commence on the requested service commencement date, and service under this agreement shall terminate on such date as mutually agreed upon by the parties. So the service agreement, which is the governing contract together with the tariff, says that these requests, which are then confirmed by the ISO, will determine the length of the term, but the rates are, the rates, terms, and conditions are set forth in the service agreement and the tariff.
Could you tell me how FERC reconciles any kind of term, such as appears in the posting, the 18 months, with the broader proposition that they're not to be discounts except for unconstrained service?
Well, I think the commission would, it would depend on someone coming to the commission to say that the discount was unwarranted because, for instance, if this, if the interface became constrained before the end of the 18 months so that there was no
right.
policy justification, a party could come to the commission with a complaint saying that the discount was no longer justified under the under 888, and the commission might well say that there was no justification for that discount.
So that would be a 206 action?
Yeah.
Section 6.7 of the tariff,
mm-hmm.
which is a joint appendix 353.
The business practices? Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It says that when the ISO accepts an offer, it indicates that the service requested at the designated offer price has been approved, i.e. accepted, right?
I'm sorry, where on 353?
6.7.
Oh, right. It says once a request has been confirmed, a transmission service reservation exists.
Right. And the offer price here was the discounted price, correct? That's what the TSR said.
That's what the request said, but the price at any point is going to be the tariff rate, the posted tariff rate, which for some period of time was the discounted rate. And then as of February 1st, 2005, it was the tariff, the non-discounted tariff rate.
What's the designated offer price under the tariff?
Well, I think that the business practices allowed for the possibility that there might be price negotiation at some point,
uh-huh.
but they actually say on...
I see. So this doesn't have anything to do with discounts? Is that your point?
That's right. This chart has to do with...
This has nothing to do with discounts?
That's right.
Hmm.
And it could be... I don't think it was available under this tariff or under this OASIS, on this OASIS at the time. There could be some sort of price negotiation between... the discounted amount and the tariff amount, the tariff ceiling. But that didn't, number one, that didn't take place in this case. And number two, if you look at both JA350 and JA359, the Midwest ISO did not offer online negotiations of price at this mm-hmm. time. So the back and forth on OASIS was about the amount of capacity and the length of the capacity reservation.
Mm. It didn't seem to me that your brief argued that there was an inconsistency between Cargill's position and the language of the OASIS posting.
The OASIS posting taken in a vacuum? There's nothing explicit in the OASIS. Are you talking about the confirmation or the OASIS posting?
OASIS posting.
The discount posting?
Yeah.
The 18 months? I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, I guess it made me feel I must be missing something because it struck me as... at best, as Judge Tatel said, ambiguous with respect to Cargill's position, and at worst, strongly against it. So I was puzzled that the Commission seemed to assume that the OASIS posting had exactly the meaning that Cargill argued.
I don't think the commission did. The commission, of course, started with this, looking at the contracts that Cargill hadn't even focused on, being the service agreements.
Right.
But it did address the, it said, for instance, in the rehearing order at paragraph 10.
Can you give me a page?
Yeah, JA 19.
Yeah.
In the rehearing order, the coalition members mischaracterized the nature of the relationship between
confirmed.
Well,
I see that.
Right.
I see that. But that doesn't seem to be an argument about the meaning of the OASIS posting.
I guess the commission just understood that that meant that the rates, the posting the rates, it just means that's the filed rate at the time, the applicable rate at the time.
Well, but I guess it's sort of in some respects an easy way for the commission to approach the case would be just to say posting doesn't mean what Cargill says it means, end of case.
It might have done that.
Okay.
I don't know
okay.
why.
I just another argument of the commission. Well, that was a non-argument of the commission.
Okay.
I'm not altogether sure why the commission put such stress on the reserved right to file under 205.
I believe that really came about, especially in the complaint order, arising from an argument that the petitioners had made in their complaint, which, as they've pointed out, they didn't pursue on appeal. Not just that these confirmations constituted some kind of contract, but they argued in their complaint that these OASIS confirmations constituted a binding fixed price contract that was subject to Mobile Sierra.
Right.
And
now, I understand that, but is there something that says that after a tariff with explicit provision for later 205 filings is itself filed, the parties couldn't enter into a contract that qualified under Sierra Mobile?
I don't know, because there's an explicit Memphis clause in the contract, in the tariff, they'd be entering into an agreement that conflicts with the tariff, and I don't know the answer to that. But here, the OASIS confirmations didn't purport in any way to conflict with the Memphis clause in the tariff. So the reason that the commission had brought up the possibility
it would be a filed rate doctrine violation, but it wouldn't because the tariff clearly contemplates different prices, right? It's not as if at least within filed rate doctrine requirements, there's flexibility, but you're saying not the flexibility to go all the way to a Sierra Mobile type agreement.
Well, I'm saying I don't know,
yeah.
But in this case, the reason the commission addressed the Memphis clause in the tariff was because there was an argument that these OASIS confirmations did create contracts
right.
that did not reserve a Memphis clause kind of right, and the commission was pointing out because the tariff is part of this contractual relationship, the Memphis clause is there in Section 9, and
I guess you're saying that, assuming arguendo, that it would be okay to have a post tariff Sierra Mobile qualifying contract in the face of the existing Memphis clause, at a minimum it would have to be very express.
Explicit,
I
yes.
Got that? Okay.
Right. Unless the court has any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Does Mr. Norton have any time? All right. Does anyone have any?